All right. Well, good morning, Rhett. Thank you for being on the podcast. I'm honored to have you as a longtime friend. But to introduce you to the audience, you're a coach, you're a marriage and family therapist, you're an endurance racer, you're an author, primarily the author of Anxious Christian, if you're going to go find that resource. You're married, got two kids. So, Rhett, thank you for being here this morning.
Thanks. I've looked forward to this, so I appreciate you having me on. Look forward to chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I start every podcast with the same question. So I'm not assuming that you've ever listened to any of my podcasts. So I'll start there. What was the last date that you and Heather went on, and what does that reveal about your leadership?
Oh. Well, this is going to sound like I'm really great at leading, and I'm not, because the last date we were on, I was just telling you before we got on, is we went to the Grand Canyon on September 8th. Well, for a few days, a couple of days before and after, and we hiked across the Grand Canyon from the North Rim to the South Rim on the 8th of September. And so that was kind of like the last planned intentional date, but that had been brewing for 6 months and probably longer than that. So it sounds like I'm really great at leading. But that was actually something we had talked about, because I felt like her and I have been doing a lot of hard work the last year, specifically in marriage counseling and individual counseling. I'm about to graduate or commence, they call it, from regen or regeneration. And so we wanted to do something physical that was difficult to kind of have a tangible representation of the emotional, mental, spiritual work we had been doing. But I think we ended up in that place too, because over time marriage had drifted. Because of me, not anything to my wife, but I had not been in good places. And so you kind of caught me in a good time where it sounds like I'm really good, but this has come full circle of me having to be more intentional in my relationship. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know we've spent some time together talking about the things that you've just mentioned. Could you reveal a little bit more about one, your desire to hike the Grand Canyon and kind of some of that backstory? And then maybe we'll go back to the relationship with you and Heather as well.
Sure. Yeah. I grew up in Arizona, had only visited the Grand Canyon once in my life, and, kind of looked at the big hole and was like, oh, okay, that's not that great. I was probably 12 years old at the time. It was after my mom died, actually. My dad had, took my brother and I kind of on a, we just on a vacation. And then in 2020, me and like six other friends did the rim to rim to rim. You call it a run, but it's really just kind of a fast hike slash run slash slog across the canyon and back. And what I discovered on that, and my brother-in-law, who's a pastor, kind of said to me and said to us at some point during that adventure, he said, it's amazing how much life is actually like below the rim, like waterfalls and rivers and animals and greenery. But less than 1% of people who visit the Grand Canyon, it's actually smaller than that, actually take a step below the rim. And I looked at statistics the other day. I saw somewhere that said the average person who visits the Grand Canyon spends about 6 minutes getting out of their car and looking at the Grand Canyon before they go into a gift shop. And so I don't know, that kind of revealed to me that all the hard work in life and relationships and marriage is lived below the rim. You have to do the hard work to excavate and go deep. And so I just, when it came time for my wife and I to, I think put an emphasis on the hard work we were doing in some way that was tangible for us, representation. I thought, let's go to the Grand Canyon. She had never been. She'd been, but we'd never hiked together really below. And also something that I know, which is Windshape, who does those marriage adventure retreats, talks about how couples need novel experiences often to kind of rewire their connection. And so I just thought, let's do something hard together. Let's let's go below the rim physically across the canyon, and also in hopes that it'll kind of maybe stir some stuff up inside of us that we can talk about. And the funny thing is, we've been talking a lot the last year anyways. So we were mostly quiet, to be honest with you, across the 14 and a half hours across the canyon, because we were just focused on the task at hand, which surprised both of us. And then when we were done with it, we kind of talked a lot more those last couple of days. So that was kind of the reason. You know, if anyone's ever been to the Grand Canyon, it's just, it's beautiful, it's rugged. And to be honest with you, the trail from north to south is well trodden, well taken care of. So you're not doing anything crazy in terms of putting yourself at risk, you know? So, that's why we went, and I highly recommend the Grand Canyon, anybody. It's overwhelmingly beautiful.
Well, that reveals a lot about my experience, the Grand Canyon. 6 minutes, when we moved to Las Vegas, Nevada, we pulled up the U-Haul truck, we stopped, and then we left. So
yeah,
maybe I need to redeem that space as well. That sounds very intriguing. And right, the metaphor that you're talking about is what we're chasing down this morning. And I know as men, in the leadership question about you and Heather, not to, I guess, to try to elevate your leadership, because you have been, perspective, right, in a hard season. You're very ambitious. You wrote books. You're doing executive coaching. You're doing counseling. You did a 100-mile race and many other races last year. So kind of share with us about that experience of, like, you're pressing, going forward, but it kind of finally led to this place of, like, man, is what I'm pursuing, is what I'm driving me really worth it in this season of life?
Yeah. I mean, that stuff sounds impressive, I think, when I, like, hear it, but, like, in all honesty, I think what I've known about myself in counseling, and I think was revealed to me at a much deeper level over the last year in Regen, because you're in a communal setting, and so just kind of have that feedback, was from an early age, I have struggled with the idea that I'm not enough, that it's never good enough, a sense of inadequacy. And the way that I've compensated with that from young age has to perform, to achieve, to do things in relationships so that I can get that affirmation from others, mostly so that I feel good enough about myself. And man, that works until it doesn't work, you know, until you realize. And I think I've always known that, but it wasn't until everything kind of fell apart that it was, like, exposed for what it was. And it fell apart mostly, it started to fall apart, but in a big way last August, a year ago August, when, you know, my family had sacrificed a lot for me to train for this Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, which kind of runs through, not kind of, it runs through Switzerland. Well, starts in France, runs through Italy, runs through Switzerland, across 106 miles. I got in through a lottery. You know, otherwise I would never gotten in. Trained really hard. We spent money to go to Europe. And then I ended up not finishing. I ended up at mile 20 pulling out. I ended up probably with COVID is what happened. Mm. But what really happened was, I think my body had broken down, and physically, but I think it was really a spiritual, emotional, mental breakdown of the culmination of years of trying to outrun my inadequacies. And then what spiraled from that, and I won't get into all the details yet, you know, at this point in my life, because it's also my wife's story, but I had just not been a very good husband or father. I think I had been disengaged for a lot of years because I was so focused on trying to feel good about who I am, that there was this huge drift in my marriage and in my parenting. But man, it was masked because I was doing these other things that people were looking at and that I could look at. And I think people thought, oh, he's a therapist, he's a former pastor, he's got his stuff together. But dude, I did not have it together. No. And it all came just crumbling down last August. And then throughout those couple of months, and for the last year, has been a long season of exposing that vulnerability in addressing it in my relationship. And, you know, to be honest, there was a period of months where I'm like, you know, am I going to lose my marriage and my family? Because I had not been in a good place, you know? So, and that goes way back, you know, Lance, like way back to childhood and just stuff that I don't think anyone ever helped me address to no fault of their own, but I just had never, I've kind of knew intellectually, but didn't know it emotionally.
Yeah. What revealed the crack for you? Like how did you know, right? Because in the seats that we sit in collectively, people perceive us as having it together, right? But the reality is that we're redeemed by Christ and put back together that way. But what revealed the crack to you?
Well, I think I'd always known, like I was saying, intellectually, like I kind of knew there was, but I think I that was a way for me to kind of control it, and maybe some false vulnerability and being able to talk about it. But I think what ultimately revealed it was just being exposed, like having conversations with my wife and realizing like the gig was up, sort of like everything that I'd, all the ways that I'd covered up my sin and struggles and dealt with them is just having a heart to heart conversation with my wife where I couldn't run anymore about from that. And ultimately then sitting down with, it trickled out, but telling everything to some close friends and family members about what I was dealing with. So it's like, once that was exposed, I couldn't run anymore. You probably remember this scene. I think it's in The Boy and His Horse, C.S. Lewis, where I think it's Eustace. He turns into a dragon over time because his heart is hardened. And there's this beautiful scene in the book where Aslan, who is the god figure, meets him one night and pulls out his big claws and has to rip the dragon skin off of Eustace layer by layer. And every time it gets deep enough, Eustace realizes it's not as deep as it needs to be. And Aslan keeps ripping it off. And I felt like that's kind of what was happening. Like all the layers that I had covered up over the years were starting to get ripped apart. And it started with me falling apart in Europe with, I couldn't have this coping behavior anymore of succeeding. That was the first race I ever finished and everything, right? And then my wife realizing some things about me, kind of discovering some things in our conversations, and then me like confessing to her some things, and then me confessing some things to some friends. I think that's what led everything to kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So clearly most everyone that's listening are men in general. And you've revealed a lot of what it takes to build meaningful, healthy relationships. Primarily it starts with courage and the sense of vulnerability. But I think for myself and those listening, and I'm sure you experienced this in your work as well, there's this fine balance between, you know, performance and ambition and drive, right? Providing, and yet like, okay, I need to be healthy as well. So what have you learned about that balance, especially as an Enneagram 9? You know, people say, well, you go to a 3 if you're healthy, right? And the 3 is right, more the performer. So how are you learning what health looks like in this season in terms of, if that is true, in terms of performance for you?
It's a good question. A couple of things. One is I think I've realized how important it is to be surrounded in community of people, close group of guys. I've always known that. I've always considered myself really lucky, actually, to have a lot of good close guy friends, and fortunate in that and blessed in that. But I think there was a wall where I didn't let them in as much. I kind of kept it you know, you probably know what I'm talking about. There's like, you let them in, but then there's this part you don't let them in. And I think that wall came crashing down, and I just owned up and took responsibility for everything. And part of regen actually is, you know, in step four, doing inventory, and then in, you know, step eight and nine, going through this like forgiveness journey, and nine, making amends. So over the last, you know, 4 to 5 months, to be honest with you, I've sat down with people and just clearly stated what I needed to take responsibility in my life and ask for forgiveness. I've written letters to people. I've told them things that nobody else knows. So I've let people in, which I think number one has been huge to me to have that level of accountability. And two, I think through regen, I think through the work of my therapists and the people in my life, I've tried to ask myself the question, when I'm achieving, right, which there's nothing wrong with achieving, what's driving that? Is it driven by a sense of inadequacy where it's never, I'm never good enough, so I keep doing these things?
Yeah.
Or is it driven by a sense of truth that that I am enough? And you and I have both done work with like Terry Hargrave and the pain and peace cycle. So I've tried to really understand that when I achieve, is it coming from a place of peace and that I'm enough, or a place of pain where I'm just chasing in the sense of inadequacy? Those have been like two huge things. And then three, I think realigning my exercise in a healthy way. Like for me, I think I need to move my body every day a little bit to feel really good. And so I've tried just to enjoy getting reconnected with that physical movement without the pressure of having to achieve or do anything with it, but just the move. So yeah, community, physical movement, and really like reflecting on what's driving my sense of achievement.
Yeah, that's good. I guess I'm 5 years removed from when I went to regen. You know, could you share more for the listeners about what regen is, and really more specifically how that can be a pathway for some people to build meaningful relationships? Because earlier this year, the new crisis is the isolation and loneliness, right? But we've known this for years, but it's getting more and more heightened.
Right.
But doing good, solid soul work like this, regen has created something that is of value. Can you share more about what you're up to with that?
Yeah, so I've known about regen like you for years, probably for 10 years, I've been referring clients to it, which is funny enough. I've been sending people to it. Regen, I mean, someone could probably correct me on this, but regen is a ministry, or regeneration, the full term, out of Watermark down in Dallas. And Watermark, from what I understand, they kind of took like Celebrate Recovery, which started at Saddleback, and kind of put their spin, their own emphasis on how they want to do that. Lots of organizations, churches do that. They take something and then they just kind of rebrand in a way that fits who they are. And so Watermark has this regeneration, which is basically the 12 steps, but with more of an emphasis on like spiritual growth, you know, and obviously rooted in Christ. And so what you do is, you know, you lots of churches around Dallas, around the country have them. It's a lot bigger here, what I've found out, in Texas and a few other states, than it is across the country. But you can go to any group, show up on any night that they have regen. And what happens is, you know, they usually start off with like worship, testimony. And then they, if you're a new guy, they put you into a group called Groundwork, which is essentially a group of guys who are new. And for 4 to 5 weeks, it could take a couple months, they're just going to have you meet with this group of guys until a group actually forms, until the guys kind of stick around and are really committed to that process. And that's called Groundwork. And there's a workbook they give you. And once a new group forms, they close that group so that you can walk over the next, you know, 36 to 48 weeks, probably with a closed confidential group of men. It could be anywhere from 2 to 3 guys with a leader, to groups of like 15 with a couple of leaders. And there are 4 books essentially after Groundwork. There's a workbook for steps 1 through 3, 4 through 6, 7 through 9, and 10 through 12. And essentially you walk through the 12 steps of recovery with a leader and among other men. And you also have a mentor that you kind of seek out, or they help you find, who you meet with weekly. So I had a mentor I met with for coffee every couple of weeks. He's actually a friend and a neighbor who trained specifically to be my mentor for this. So I'm really thankful for him. And, you know, that's what you do. And then eventually they don't call it graduation. They call it commencement, because what they want to communicate to you is that you're always in recovery. Like, you're always working through processes of forgiveness, reconciliation, transformation with people in your life. It's not like you got that figured out and you're done. So that's what Regen is. I'm super thankful that I got into it. At this point, I most likely will be volunteering at my home church as a leader. Been talking to them for a long time about that, to help guys to continue that healing process for me. So that's what it is. And, you know, if guys listening are interested, you can just Google Regen and check out all the sites and see where they're offered. And you can go any place you want. It doesn't have to be a home church. You don't have to go to a church. You don't even have to be a Christian to go. But I highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's good. So this comes up frequently, but I'll make the direct parallel, like as an endurance racer. And when I think about Romans chapter 5, right, that suffering produces this sense of, you know, perseverance, this sense of endurance in us. We never ask for the hard seasons in life, whatever that season is, right? But what are you learning for you spiritually about this season of kind of rebuilding and becoming whole again, as it parallels to just endurance racing as well?
Yeah, I mean, I love that verse you just quoted. I think what I've learned is that endurance is a key component to growth. When we could use a different word, like steadfastness or patience, this idea of this is good timing. I just finished the Odyssey by Homer, which I had made multiple attempts at when I was younger and could never get through it. And I think what I realized, you know, at 48, I have now suffered enough and endured enough to appreciate his story, which is he goes to fight the Trojan War, which takes 10 years. And then he wants to come home, but it takes him 10 years to get home because all the obstacles that are put in his way. And part of his journey coming home, the 10 years, is that he's transformed into a different person by the time he comes home than he would have been if he just came home. And I thought a lot about that, and thought a lot about Paul's writings, about this idea of endurance, that spiritual growth isn't overnight, and it takes time and it takes patience. And I don't know, running for me and like lifting weights just day in and day out since I was a young kid has taught me that things accumulate over time, progress. And this is something you know, obviously, in your training. And I try to teach that in counseling, like the whole mindset that you're just building reps upon reps upon reps upon reps to grow. And it's not something that we can, you know, wish for or magical thinking. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm rambling, but I didn't go into endurance sports to teach me that, but that's what I've learned, is that you have to have patience and steadfastness, and you have to suffer and you have to recalibrate. Sometimes you get into a race and you realize things aren't going very well. Yeah. And you just kind of have to stop for a second and rethink what you need to do for yourself to keep moving. And, you know, Paul's language about, you know, this race is, I think, really helpful. You know, sometimes we get into the middle of a race, which is life, and things fall apart, and we have to stop and assess and figure out what we got to do to kind of recalibrate, take care of ourselves, to keep moving forward. What people do we have to bring into our life to keep moving forward, you know, our crew and stuff. So I don't know, man, that's a good question. I'm just kind of thinking through all of it, but I do believe all my training helped me do the work that was now before me when everything around me was falling apart. Like, I honestly believe that. I don't think if I would have run those races or trained that I would have had the capacity to endure the difficulty in my family and marriage life this last year.
Yeah.
It's almost like God knew what he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, just in terms of transparency, I mean, we're coming out of a very difficult season, and thankfully it's felt like it's a short season, not a super long season. But I've told several people, I'm like, no wonder that people's lives literally fall apart with alcohol, addiction, abuse, whatever, you know, coping mechanism you want to throw out there, if you don't have the hope of Christ that anchors you, right? Mm-hmm. And hopefully people find that on their journey. But man, the hard seasons reveal who we are and who we're not. And I think that's the hard thing about it is like, I thought I was this, but yet the gap that I'm currently experiencing right now in my heart is so far from reality of what other people are experiencing around me.
Yeah. And I think something I think you and I've talked about this on my bookshelf here, but I finished earlier this year, this biography on Paul by N.T. Wright.
Yeah.
And I think what I walked away with was realizing how much Paul suffered actually just to proclaim the message of Christ. And what actually, if we got back and use the language, what an endurance athlete he was, moving from place to place to place over the long haul and being patient and being steadfast and suffering. And what I realized too, because you and I have a lot of probably similar interests, is that, you know, Paul comes across the Stoics a lot in his teachings and in the different Roman provinces and stuff. And I love a lot of the Stoic philosophy, but what I realize it's missing is missing this like telos of like Christ as the anchor.
Yeah.
It's more about, at least from my like lay understanding,
yeah.
It's more about like being in the present moment and dealing with stuff now, but it's missing this eternal hope that's anchored in Christ. And I think that's what you just mentioned, which I think is really critical, is like we have to have the hope that this will all turn out if we're going to continue to endure and suffer for something.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk super practical for people listening. What are, I call them rumble strips, call them red lights, yellow lights, call them whatever you want to call them, signals.
That's good. I like that, rumble strips.
What are signals that people need to pay attention? What are signals that men need to pay attention to? Because inevitably, we don't want the suffering, but what are things that we can pay attention to before the suffering season and even put in place before these seasons arrive?
Man, that's a good question. Because it's assuming, too, that they're going to have enough awareness, right? That we have enough awareness to pay attention. So if we have enough awareness to pay attention, I think a rumble strip or red light is that if we notice we're starting to isolate ourselves from people. I think a huge flag is if, let's say you're in a relationship, dating, married, whatever, and your spouse wants to get help, but you're not wanting to get help, that could be a huge sign that you're not paying attention to. You know, sometimes I hear a lot of men who ignore that. They're like, their wife asked them for counseling years ago and they just didn't want to. I think internally, if you just notice you're waking up feeling anxious and depressed, like not wanting to go on with your day, that's a huge red flag. I mean, we all go through life experiencing ups and downs, but like if you start to notice that happening, if you notice you're numbing out with whatever it could be alcohol, pornography, video games, like you're just kind of disengaged and checked out. I mean, for me, those are big ones: isolation, disengagement, ignoring what people around you are wanting or asking, just waking up, not wanting to face the day. I think those are all like pretty critical ones that start to pile up. And just, you know, physically, if you're just not feeling good, like you're not taking care of yourself and you're just starting to like, just notice that, you know, part of the isolation, disconnection too, if you're a Christian, is feeling that disconnected, like God is really far and adrift and you're not spending time, connecting to God. To me, those are just kind of massive, like red flags.
Yeah, that's good. I've started integrating the Whoop band a little bit for myself.
I saw that.
And coaching clients. And what it's revealing to me in this season is that in my head, I've always thought that I'm getting more sleep than actually what my Whoop is currently revealing. And to see the stress signals, you know, going up or down as well. Cause sometimes like we need the data just to say, oh, something's not right. But it's up to you and your responsibility to do something about that and course correct, right? Because going back to what you said at the beginning, we're assuming that somebody's self-awareness is even high enough to know that they're coping with the various things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, that's interesting too, the Whoop. I mean, I have somebody I've worked with who a really like high performer, and recently they've basically used the Whoop band as a tool to help them decide which projects they take on or not, at what pacing, because they realized in certain seasons when they took on more, they woke up with a score that was super low. And this whole, like, just that tool has changed their life. You know, and before I hopped on a call with you, I'm on a thread with some other guys I ran the Grand Canyon with. Two or three of them have the Whoop band. They were sharing their scores this morning. Yeah. So I think a tool, I mean, that's one tool. I think, you know, guys could also, you probably have some that you use, but maybe there's other tools, you know, that people could implement. I know something my wife and I have tried to do a lot differently this season is not a date night, even though we go on dates. It's a scheduled one time a week where we go sit, usually at coffee, and the goal is, how are you doing? We're not talking about the kids or the finances or work or anything. It's just like, we're just checking with each other. And I found like, that's a great tool, especially over time, as a way to build a safe place for my wife and I to talk about hard stuff. So that's another tool like I've tried to use recently, and as it relates to relationships with my spouse.
Yeah, that's good. So, man, I could keep going.
I got as much time as you want until later, until 11 o'clock when I have to see a client. So start my day off, but.
That's good. What is important to you right now in this season? Like, what is Rhett? I mean, other than some of this rebuilding stuff that we've talked about, like, what are you currently working on? Why is it important? And then like, why is it important to us?
Yeah. And this is gonna bring me back to how you introduced me, actually, because I've kind of had this like mental shift. And interesting enough, I'm going to give a shout out to him, my friend, Justin Keller, who's like a marketing web designer guy, friend in Houston. Mm-hmm. I was on a phone call with him the other day, and he was just helping me think through some web stuff. He's not doing my stuff, but he was thinking, and I don't think he realized that he was actually like a therapist to me in that conversation. But what he helped me realize is, hopefully I can make this make sense, but I'm going to launch a new website, but I was dragging all over. He helped me realize I'm just bringing all the old stuff over to a new site with just some new update, fresh look. And what I realized is I'm in this season. I think God is asking me to step out and just do some new stuff and not hold on to the past or what I have done that's been successful. But there's a fear in doing that, because if some of that stuff got you to where you are, you don't want to let go of that.
Yeah.
But like the anxious Christian, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that was written in 2012. I mean, that's old. I was doing executive coaching for a few years, and I've told you over breakfast, I think I've stepped back from that, and I'm mainly trying to dig into therapy more, which I think I'm really good at doing. But I was afraid to put my eggs in one basket. So I've really kind of just focused on, I want to do really good therapy work. I do some instead of like executive coaching, I've tried to really focus on helping some leaders in some organizations think about mental health in the organization. I would like to write a new book, you know, but that takes time. And so I'm thinking through that. So I'm trying to let go of the old stuff, which was good. It got me to where I needed to be. But I feel like in this new season, God's like just asking me to step out and try some new stuff, let go of what has made me successful before. And I think that involves like I think that mirrors the work my wife and I were doing too, which in some conversations, her and I basically have used the phrase of God really needs to bring beauty out of ashes. We need to have new, like, newness and not do the old stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, you're catching me in the middle of just kind of thinking through this. This conversation happened on Friday, and I think has been a culmination of, I don't know, I mean, I just don't want to keep rehashing the same stuff I've been doing forever.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the secret fears behind some of that, right? I mean, that's letting go reveals a lot, but it's also this anticipation of, man, there's momentum and possible joy behind that. But stepping beyond those secret fears, what are those?
I think it goes back to that old fear of just coming up inadequate and not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I found some things that made me feel good enough, and I've milked those for as long as I can to some unhealthy degrees. And I feel like, you know, that old self, new self, pain cycle, peace cycle stuff. I really like Paul's words in Ephesians 4 about taking off the old and putting on the new, or just, it's hard to let go of things that they're not necessarily bad. Maybe some are, but that have made you successful in whatever success looks like to you. Like, why would you let go of those and try something new?
Yeah.
And I think there's a fear of just, what if I don't succeed? What if it doesn't work? And then, you know, all those fears of, we're going to end up on the streets living in poverty with my family, and I'm not a good husband.
Yeah.
Like, it's the best.
But it's real, right? Yeah.
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 I don't, you know, there's that phrase people use, about like burning the ships, you know, you get to a new land, and that can be a helpful metaphor sometimes, not always, but I feel like I'm trying to let go of some old stuff and just breathe some new life into some new things, allow God to breathe some new life. And that's what even the whole process of regeneration is about, like just being made new. What if people don't like the new rat, you know? What if I don't like them?
What if Heather's like, what is going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
I thought we had this conversation.
Yeah. You know, but I think you know this in your marriage and parenting too, is, man, until you have those honest conversations with your spouse, like, you think you have it together and you're doing all the right things, and then you realize with some honest feedback, like, you're way off track. Like, I've realized there's been lots of years in my marriage now where my wife hasn't like felt close, or I haven't been doing the things that I needed to be doing. But I didn't realize that because I was so focused on what gave me the affirmation. Yeah, because if she's not happy, like, you think I'm going to go to her for the affirmation? I'm like, I'm going to keep running, man. So I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So just to dovetail that a little bit more, a decade from now, maybe 3 years from now, who do you want to become? Who is Rhett becoming in 3 years or a decade from now?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that, like, who I want to be. I want to be the type of person who's really open and communicative in relationships, that the people that I walk day to day with, my wife, my two kids, and my friends and family, that there's a sense of openness, that we can be really real and transparent with each other, and they can always speak into my life. Like, that's really critical. And, you know, I'm 48. I think I'm just tired of chasing success. I don't know who it was. I think it might have been Thomas Merton in one of his writings about, you know, you you climb this wall, you get to the top, and you look, realize you're climbing the wrong wall or something. You know, I don't know if it was Merton, but he says it much more eloquently. But I think I'm getting to a place of like, I just really want to do what God wants me to do. Like, I want to do the work that God has equipped me to do and not keep chasing all the stuff that I've been chasing. And again, I know that sounds vague, but that's kind of the internal turn I've been like thinking about, like just open hands. God, let me be your servant, do the work you want me to do. And I want to stop chasing all this stuff in my mind that I thought would make me successful. Like, honestly, books or something. Like, I thought I want to be this writer and get these books and be a famous podcaster, all these things that, you know, are hard enough to do anyways. But you spend a lot of energy like pursuing things. And I'm like, maybe that's not what God wants me to do. So I think I'm just trying to be in line with who God wants me to be and be in open relationships with people that give me direction and guidance to help move me along that path. Yeah, and I just want my kids and wife to be able to, 3 years from now, 10 years from now, to say, Rhett is a really great husband and father. He's really engaged with his wife and kids. And those are the most important things in his life, along with his relationship with Christ. Like, that's what I want, really. And I'm not just saying that because that's the good answer. Like, it's taken me 48 years and it's a lot of suffering to actually, I think, believe that.
Yeah. No, that's good. We're going to land this plane, but you keep revealing things that I want to ask. How do you know the invitation of God's voice versus Rhett's? So in this season of becoming, how do you personally discern following in the way of the good shepherd and his voice and tethering out like, man, this is my voice. I've already been down this path before.
Yeah, you know, two things. I'm going to start with one, and that is, I actually think the most important thing I've learned is having solid people around me. And that can start with just like a mentor, maybe, and then expand to a group of like a couple of guys, maybe, that I walk through life, and then it can kind of, those circles can get bigger. But what I've realized is those are the voices, and these are Christian guys who are following God. Those are the voices that help me discern if I'm like, I'm being crazy and way off course, or if like that sounds wise. Because I've walked a lot of years without that. I've walked a lot of my own wisdom and knowledge thinking, hey, I'm a former pastor, I'm a therapist, I know what's, and that's only gotten me into trouble. So I think having a group of people, especially like one guy that's mentoring you, to reflect back to you, is this what God's asking? And then two, and I'm not great at this, just being rooted in God's word, whether I'm reading passages every day or a few times a week, or doing a workbook that asks questions that's also rooted in God's word. Like, I need something every day, or a pretty good rhythm, 5 out of 7 days, where I'm kind of grounded in that to help me see. Like, yeah, I think I'm moving in the right direction versus being in like an echo chamber. Like, if I can do those two things, bring what I'm learning every day and then reflect it off a person or a few groups of people, I think that gives me a pretty solid just foundation to move from.
It's good.
And, you know, like you said earlier, I think you know this from all your research, the older men get, the more isolated men tend to become and lack relational connection and usually struggle more with depression, anxiety. And so it's obviously way more important for us men as we age, especially, to have more of those relationships so that we don't get isolated and way off course in our own journey.
Yeah. You're revealing really a theme of, I'm speaking at a men's conference, I guess, next weekend. And they really wanted this desire of like, hey, we need our men to know what meaningful connections and relationships look like, right? You're talking about mentorship and building your band of brothers. Earlier, you mentioned crew, right? Yeah. Who's in your boat type of deal. I think about like you got to know who's in your foxhole.
Yeah.
Before you get in the foxhole, right? Because that season, that hard season's coming. Are you building into other men, believing in other people around you? Because ultimately, I think all this is coalescing with the same thing. Is like, you probably wouldn't be on this journey if you didn't have such a strong brotherhood and Heather believed in you, right? Revealing
right.
God's identity of who Rhett is as a beloved son, I think is what I'm just taking away from our time together.
Yeah, and I just joined a new Bible study at my church last week, and they talked about having 2 a.m. friends, you know, the guys you can call at 2 a.m. And I use the word crew, you know, because like in a race, in an endurance race, you got a crew at an aid station who helps you. And usually in a long race, and you've probably experienced with Spartan races, like sometimes you come in, you're not in a good mood and you're kind of disoriented and you need someone to like speak truth in you and say, dude, you got to eat right now. And I need you to do this. And we're going to check this. I don't care if you're upset. Like you need people to like guide you on that and to speak truth into your life. And yeah, I think a lot of guys are just, I know this is the purpose of your work that you're trying to do in your coaching, but I think a lot of guys are flying solo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it works until it doesn't work. And it's often applauded in our culture of kind of the lone wolf who can handle it all. But man, what God has revealed to me this last year is really the depth of love that I've experienced from other men in my life and circles when I've talked to them about my brokenness. And I've had many men in the last year share with me things that they've never told anybody either. And so what I've realized is guys are aching for that safe, deep connection, I think.
Yeah. Well, Rhett, I am honored by your time this morning. Where can people find you and this new website that's coming in the coming weeks, months, year, who knows, but
who knows?
Tell us where you're at.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty easy. My name is pretty unusual, Rhett. So it's just my name, rhettsmith.com, essentially rhettsmith.com. There's a website with work on there and content. And then, I'm on Instagram, things like that. I'll post some stuff here and there. Anything there, if people ever have any questions too, there's a contact page on my website. They can always ask me. Even if people don't want to come to counseling, like I'm more than happy to shoot books, ideas, or resources to people if they have questions about anything, if they're listening to this. So yeah, feel free to reach out.
Good. Let's end there. What are three resources that have been meaningful to you in your journey, past, present, future? That could be helpful to somebody right now.
Oh man, you're asking the tough question, like about books and resources. since we're talking to men,
yeah.
I love this book by Larry Crabb, The Silence of Adam.
Yeah.
I think it's phenomenal. Gets into some deep stuff, especially if you're a father. I also love Richard Rohr's book, The Wild Man's Journey. You know, I think those are a couple of really great books. Other than that, Richard Rohr's book, Breathing Underwater, which is it's his spiritual take on the 12 steps, I think is really, really powerful. I know you've read that and stuff like that. So I don't know. There's lots of resources, but I'd start with those, especially if you're a guy listening.
All right, brother. Well, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, man. Enjoy being on.